Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am your host, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work over on TalkingChop.com, where I've been the deputy site manager since 2018. I'm in the minor league editor since 2015. None of you really seem to care too much about how long I've been there, but I do like to kind of let you know where I'm coming from. Now, normally this is the part of the show where I introduce our normal co-hosts, and that would be Garrett Spain, Gaurav Vidak, the rest of the minor league crew. But that is not what's happening this week. We're going to do a little bit of a special episode this week, and I'm going to have a very special co-host to be talking a little bit about his journey to being a professional baseball player, the Braves' first-round pick from the 2021 draft, former Wake pitcher, and now Atlanta Braves pitcher. Ryan Cusack is joining me this week, and we're going to talk a bit about his journey to the pros. Ryan, how are you, my man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you taking the time. I know that during the offseason, free time is – I say very precious because, you know, you're just the time where you're getting to unplug a little bit, also kind of getting the work that you need in. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me a little bit about kind of what your journey to the pros has been and what adjustments you've been making and all that stuff. And I know that a lot of people, we get asked a ton about you, who you are as a pitcher, what we can expect of you. I probably get asked three times a week as to when you're going to be in the major league. So I don't think we're going to be addressing that this particular podcast. But, you know, again, it tells you a lot about kind of what Braves fans are like in terms of how excited they are. Once they get a new prospect in the system, they want to know when they're going to be seeing you on the mound up there in Truist Park. So we have a lot of ground to cover. Hopefully we can get through all of it relatively quickly so you can get back to what you have going on the rest of your day. The first question I had was, when did you start playing baseball? And kind of as you kind of were growing up playing, when did you realize you were good at baseball and like maybe that being professional was in the cards for you?
Yeah. So coming from the Northeast, I'm from Boston, and there's not exactly a ton of pro prospects that come out of that region. Certainly not as many as around Georgia. But I think I really started to realize maybe around ninth grade that I'd be able to play Division One. I was working out with some guys that were those Division One type arms, and some had moved on to be pro arms. And I think once I started working out with them, realizing that I could work just as hard as them, and if I put in that same type of work, I could get to that spot. That's when it started to, be in the back of my mind. And as I went throughout high school, it just became more and more of a reality. And it's what my dream was since I started playing. I was 5 years old playing T-ball in kindergarten and started pitching in third grade. So once I got on the mound in third grade, I knew that's where I wanted to be, and I wanted to be in a pro uniform.
So you were a pitcher since third grade. You weren't playing other positions? Because I know like a lot of kids, I mean, when they're growing, you play like the best player, they play every position, like whatever they can get their hands on, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was playing shortstop. I was playing first base. I was catching a lot in Little League, and some of my coaches liked me behind the dish before on the mound, just because I could throw anyone out on that small diamond. But no, I mean, I love pitching.
I imagine.
And that's what I would do with my dad. We'd go out to the field and, you know, I'd take a few ground balls at short and hit some soft toss, but it'd mostly be every day, you know, just throwing him, getting down on one knee and just giving me a target.
Well, I imagine that your knees are probably pretty happy with you that you decided not to stick behind the plate and you actually got to stay on
exactly.
the ground. Yeah, those guys, I don't know, they're built different, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. So you start playing high school in Northeast, and you're actually from a pretty small high school in the Northeast as well. And when you graduated high school, you were a pretty highly guarded draft prospect even back then. You got drafted, one of those late round picks, again, a lot of one of those kind of, you call it a courtesy pick, you call it a follow pick, things like that. But that didn't reflect where you were regarded as a draft prospect. You like could have gone maybe late day one, early day two, if you had decided to go pro, you know, just based on where rankings were. Like, it's, you know, it's impossible to really kind of project that sort of thing this far down the line, right? But what ultimately drove your decision to not go pro and decide to go to Wake Forest?
Right. So, I mean, I played on that summer circuit that a lot of kids play on after their junior year of high school. The World Would Bat, the Perfect Game National, East Coast Pro, Area Code, kind of traveling all around the country. And that was the first time that I really compared myself against the best of the best. You know, I'd be pitching on one mound and then the guy coming in after me would also be throwing in the 90s. And I was able to see, you know, how was my stuff compared to his stuff and how does it match up against these hitters. So, you know, I thought that I was ready and I ended up making a move. I was at my public high school, Lincoln Sudbury, for my first 3 years. And I ended up transferring from my senior year to Avon Old Farms, which was a step up in competition. We played more games. We went down to Florida for 2 weeks to play some games down there. So instead of playing the 15 games in the public school, Boston area, I went down to Connecticut and we were playing 35 games and getting more reps and against better competition. So I made that step kind of in preparation, kind of like a test to see if I'd be ready, you know, for the college game or for pro ball. And, you know, living on my own, I was 2 hours from home and I felt like I was in a spot where I was ready to make that next step to pro baseball. And that if I got picked where I wanted to, I'd be ready to make that next step. But, you know, things didn't work out and it ended up being the best thing that ever happened because it's not like I just became a normal college kid and went back to, you know, playing video games and, you know, not really focusing on baseball, but instead I kept that same professional approach that I was preparing for senior year of high school and took that into my 3 years at Wake. And that's why I was able to have the three most productive years out of any other college player and be where I am today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I guess my next kind of the follow-up there is, you know, obviously, you know, going to Wake Forest worked out well for you. But when you're making your decision, okay, I'm not going pro out of high school. What made you decide that you wanted to go to Wake?
Well, I was committed to Wake. I committed at the end of my sophomore year and they had a history of producing some pitching prospects. And, you know, it was a good school, had a great pitching coach, Matt Hobbs, who ended up leaving the fall of my freshman year to go to Arkansas, but was replaced by Coach Hendricks, who I really worked hand in hand with. And we had a lot of success there in development. And I think everything kind of lined up. They had a little bit of a Northeast pipeline. I was familiar with a lot of my future teammates and it seemed more comfortable to go down there as opposed to a place that maybe had only state residents on the team and I'd be the only out-of-state guy.
Well, there's definitely a lot of that with Division I guys, right? Like, you know, it's just, you know, whatever state they grew up with, that's just whatever the big university is, they just end up at that place, you know, Michigan, right. You know, Michigan, Nebraska, Georgia, Florida, all those guys. So a lot has been made of Wake Forest baseball program, and you kind of talked a little bit about the coaches there and specifically its ability to create big league prospects, in particular pitching. Kind of give us some insight as to what went on behind the scenes with you specifically in terms of what the staff at Wake worked on with you and what adjustments they made with you to kind of get you to be able to achieve your goals.
Yeah. So they changed up the pitching staff since I was there. But during my 3 years, I worked with Coach Hendricks and his assistant Evan Wise, who's now at Georgia Gwinnett. And I worked with them day in and day out throughout COVID, throughout the shutdowns and everything in between. And that those were my two guys. And without them, I wouldn't be where I am today. That's pretty obvious. And really, it all started with changing my delivery. So as a freshman, I was a two-seam slider guy with a horizontal slider and some sink and a lot of arm side run. I was stepping towards the third base dugout and was more of a rotational pitcher. I was quad dominant as that term has kind of popped up recently. And I was pushing really on my toe into the third base dugout and not really driving to the plate. And Coach Hendricks and we talked and he said, you know, you're so strong in the gym. It's not like you have to build all that muscle to drive to the plate. You just really have to clean it up and be more efficient. You need to use the muscles that you're working on in the gym and translate and have them translate to the mound. So that started getting into my hip hinge. You know, it starts from the foot and putting all my weight into my heel and driving in a linear fashion from my heel to the plate. Opposed to driving from my toe to the third base dugout and then trying to shift around to, and hopefully my arm catches up on time. So really repatterning the lower half and learning how to hip hinge with my body. You know, I'm 6'6", got some long levers, and I hadn't played a ton of baseball coming in the Northeast and you know, hadn't pitched a whole lot of innings and didn't have a whole lot of wear and tear on the arm. So it seemed like I was a little behind in terms of my mechanics, but when I repatterned the lower half, everything started to click and, I began throwing harder and, with those changes and switching from the two seam to the four seam, and having less arm side run and more of a vertical approach, it just seemed like over the next 2 years, it made more sense to go from that horizontal slider to more of a 12-6 curveball, which was then changed. We started working on a slider that was more of a gyro slider that still had that same up-down profile to mirror the, you know, the vertical approach of my four-seam. So we attacked a lot of things, and it was kind of starting at the foundation and really going back to the drawing board with that. But and honestly, a few of those things are things that I still have to address every single day. Once they're taught, it's not that they're ingrained in my head, but it's something that I have to go back to and reteach myself every time I pick up the baseball.
Well, I imagine that your arm was probably pretty happy with kind of limiting some of that rotational force that you're kind of putting in that sort of effort, having to get your arm to catch up. And, you know, maybe you were a little bit fortunate coming out of the Northeast. You just didn't have the same mileage on that arm. Cause with that approach, definitely, you know, work, you know, a lot of things work out for a reason. Just a quick question in terms of velocity, in terms of like, once you were going more down towards the plate and kind of getting your lower half more involved in correct ways. What was the velocity jump that you ended up seeing?
So my freshman year and throughout high school, I could get it up. You know, I touched a 97 in high school, and pretty much every outing that I had my freshman year was 2-4 with a few higher ticks when the adrenaline got going. But as the season wore on and my freshman year, I lost a little bit of weight during the season just due to the travel and not staying on top of it. It's a long season, so that's easy to happen. I was ended up throwing, you know, 90, 92 down in the Cape League once I approached the 100 inning mark. So essentially 91, 94 throughout the 100 innings that I threw freshman year. My sophomore year, I ended up being, I mean, it was COVID year, but I was 95, 97, touch a nine every once in a while. And then this year I was, 97, 99 in the first inning, touch a 102. And, would settle in around that 96, 98 for the rest of my outing.
It's always wild to me, just kind of like those, just getting your mechanics cleaned up. You know, like a lot of people were like, he has to get, you know, more size or more muscle to be able to throw harder. And just when you hear guys just like, no, I just was more on line to the plate, or I made this one adjustment. And, you know, I mean, obviously it wasn't just one adjustment in most cases, but just like little adjustments here and there, how big of a difference that makes.
Absolutely. And it's about, it was for me, I was kind of a sponge and just listened to what they had to say every single day. And, you know, the first 20 cues that they tried to give me, it didn't work. And it was finally that one cue that all of a sudden it clicked, and I felt the ground, and I felt strong in that position, and I was able to utilize the muscles that I worked so hard on in the gym for the previous 5 years to gain. And it finally clicked and translated and made a huge difference.
That's awesome. So you find some success in your freshman year, albeit with some growing pains here and there. Not particularly strange to happen for a freshman coming out of a Northeast school. You pitch well in the Cape Cod League. Obviously, with the COVID year in 2020, you pitch well in very limited action. Just don't get to pitch all that much. And this year, you put yourself on the map in a big way, throwing as hard as you were. The success you were finding at Wake, and I guess what I'm trying to get at here is now we're kind of getting into that pre-draft process before this year's draft. And the question that I'm sure a lot of our listeners are wondering is, when did you realize that the Braves were really, really interested in bringing you into the organization? And, you know, did you think that, you know, at the end of the day, when the dust settled, that they were going to be the team that drafted you?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Honestly, I knew that they were interested about 5 minutes before the pick. And I think it was right around between the 22nd and 23rd pick. Is when I realized that things were going to look that way. And, you know, when approaching draft day, after never going through it being a first round guy, and especially never going through there and being in person at the draft, you never know what's going to happen. And one pick can throw off the draft. So, you know, I knew that there was probably a group of like 8 or 9 teams that were seriously in the mix, you know, in that first round. And I knew that the Braves were one of them, but I hadn't had a real Zoom meeting with them up until June, when I had, I think, 25 Zoom meetings with every other team in December and January. But I did have a good relationship with the area scout, Billy Best, and he had spent a lot of time around Wake, and I think he knew me. And looking back, if I probably counted the number of times that people saw me, he probably saw me the most. And just hanging around and seeing me get my work in, even on days that I wasn't pitching, I think he became familiar with the type of player that I was and the type of person I was. And I think that's kind of what ended up making the pick.
Just so our listeners are aware, Billy Best is the area scout in North Carolina, and a lot of Braves prospects have joined the organization because of the recommendation of Billy Best. And if you were to ask people in the organization among like the best scouts in the organization, Billy would be on most people's short list. So to say that Billy was that excited about you and really built that relationship with you, and, you know, a guy that came from North Carolina in his area joins the organization, speaks volumes to the work you do did and kind of what he sees about your future, because Billy's very, very good at his job. So I actually want to talk a little bit about what you alluded to, which was the draft night festivities, right? Because you were one of the few guys that actually got invited to attend the actual draft. It was a live audience. First time we had it, that same, right. Like they had done the MLB Network, you know, studio stuff where they had a few guys in there and they were just kind of like sitting in a row next to each other. It felt a little sterile versus what we see in like the NFL, NBA, where it was this grand spectacle. And they really tried to do that. And I think that they did a good job. What was that experience like, and kind of, you know, having that live audience? Were you nervous at all that you weren't going to go that first night and you were going to be one of those guys that they were going to have the camera on, wondering when you're going to get called, or like your whole family's there, obviously. So what was kind of that whole experience like for you?
Yeah, it was really cool. I think it's always a decision that you got to make. And really, I got invited 2 weeks before the draft. And during those 2 weeks, I'm having some private workouts and I'm still trying to feel things out. And, you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, I thought that I had a really good shot with, you know, five teams of being surefire first rounder. And I guess I guess right, but it was definitely a gutsy call to go out there. And I'm so glad that I did, because it just made the experience even cooler if it was even possible. So to go out there, be with my family, and Coach Hendricks was out there with me, and Greg Robbins, who trained me since I was in eighth grade up in Boston, he was out there too. So they had us all fly out, and it was a really cool experience just for things to come full circle.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
So now you're Brave. Congratulations on that. And you go down to Florida for your post-draft workouts. You throw some bullpens down there, and you make your organizational debut in Augusta, which I was sad to be able to miss. Unfortunately, I was hurt for that period of time, where making that drive out to Augusta wasn't feasible. I couldn't put my foot on my gas pedal, let alone drive for 3 hours out that way. But and you make six strong appearances, you know, and you were as advertised. You know, the fastball was crazy live. You know, you were dismissing those guys. I mean, the low A felt this year like it was never going to be a challenge for you. And once you got there, that's pretty much what happened, right? In your experience, though, making those first few pro appearances, did you make any sort of adjustments to kind of what you were trying to accomplish now that you were a pro versus kind of, you know, if you're at Wake, you're trying to win every game, you're, you know, going after, you know, ACC titles and trying to advance. But as a pro, you're kind of developing, adding things to your repertoire. So kind of this first experience as a pro, what adjustments did you make as a pro? And what was the biggest difference that you saw in going against professional hitters versus, say, you know, the guys in college?
Right. So I think that some you just mentioned there is important, and I think it attributed to a lot of my successes, that a lot of people do have that mindset of, all right, I'm in the minor leagues, I am going to step back and try to work on things, and I'm not really going to care about the outcome of the game. And I've played baseball my whole life, and I just don't get how you could step out on the baseball field without trying to win. And I think that I never lost that aggression that I had. And if anyone that's listening, if you've seen me compete out there, I'm a fiery competitor. And I think that's what has led to all my success so far. And I think it's what's going to be the key to my success in the future. And I'm just never going to lose that. And I think a lot of guys tend to be like, oh, I'm going to work on my breaking ball today. And I just don't get that. If a kid can get out with fastballs, I'm going to punch him out as fast as I can. So I think that it was a happy medium to that, but you know, definitely not forgetting the competitive fire while also having an approach. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to try to throw my slider in situations that I may not usually be comfortable in, but I'm not going to play around too long. I'm going to play around one pitch, and if I don't execute it, I'm back to what I need to do and what I need to accomplish, which is win the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you kind of, what you did in that kind of your pro debut was again, maybe work on a few things here and there, but no major changes or adjustments. You were just kind of show where you currently were at Augusta and see how that played. Does that seem fair as assessment, kind of what you were going for?
Yeah, well, there was a little bit of a tweak and a breaking ball. The slider is something that I threw my freshman year, and it was more of a horizontal pitch. It spun more around that, that 744 axis. And I brought it down to more of that 645 axis to make more of a 12-6 shape to mirror the 12-15 on my four-seam fastball. And the thing is, in college, I think it played a lot better than in pro ball. There's a you can get some swing and misses on a big breaking ball, but when you face hitters with better approaches, which I definitely ran into this year, where teams had solid approaches and were spitting on a breaking ball and just trying to hunt fastball, and they may not hit it the first three times, but they're going to try to be on it for the fourth time, and no matter what, they're going to take the breaking ball. I think the big sweeping breaking ball that I had in the spring was effective, but it just wasn't effective when that was my only off speed. So having that slider that I worked on in June when I stayed down at Wake between my last game against Pitt and the draft, I developed this gyro slider, and it was more of a harder pitch. I was really thinking cutter with the pitch, and it ended up having some good induced vert with not a whole lot of horizontal. So it kind of worked perfectly, and it was easy to locate for me. And it was something that I'm familiar with the slider grip that I was using. I just kind of changed the wrist action, and I was able to spot it where I want instead of the 12-6 that really I was throwing for only 6 months. And it probably takes a lot longer than 6 months to learn how to throw a curveball and then be able to land something with, negative 15 IVB. Instead, I'm throwing in between 0 and -2 IVB where I can spot it up, and it's not as big of a movement profile. It's closer to the fastball. So learning how to use that. And I think the idea was to use that as my primary off speed off of my fastball so that I get comfortable with it. And then I can add in, my third and fourth pitches next year when I'm stretched out and have a full season to work with. So I think I definitely struggled the first couple games with my slider. I broke off a few, but I spiked a bunch of them, and I ended up dominating with fastballs those games. But as I went on, I kind of bought into the idea of, all right, I'm going to, use a slider in one of my opening pitches and see how they react, and then try to find it early in the at bat so that I can find it late and be more comfortable going to it with a two strike pitch. So learning how to use the slider was a huge win for me in those six starts.
Yeah. And I imagine just kind of a harder breaking ball just in those counts where you want to throw a breaking ball, just giving a hitter less time to react and kind of being able to, you're already a guy that's going to, they have to guess correctly very quickly when you have that kind of velocity coming out of you. So kind of giving them a little less time to give them less opportunity to guess correctly and give them more opportunities to make mistakes. And then it allows just kind of the rest of your stuff to play up, kind of just all those changing speeds types things, just the old school arguments, right? Like at the end of the day, if you can throw the game at a speeds, it's a lot harder to time you up, right? It's not, if you're just only throwing one speed, eventually someone's going to figure out when they need to swing. This actually kind of leads in pretty well here, is because players who succeed at high levels of competition, regardless of whether they make it to the actual major leagues or not, you're already at the tip of the top, right? You're already among the absolute elite to ever play the game. You have been drafted in the major leagues, but a lot of those guys talk about how they're always learning and that everything is a work in progress. Guys who have been in the league with, 10 all-star game appearances, they're still talking about how they're changing things, how they're doing things, their approach to batters even, or even just little tweaks to pitches here and there as the data gets better, or as they learn things about themselves and who they are as pitchers as they get older. It's always a work in progress. So if this is you taking a step back and looking at you as the pitcher, how would you grade all of your pitches? And what's the one thing that you for sure want to improve going into 2022?
well, I know that my fastball is elite, and it's elite. And I think the combination with my fastball sliders is pretty lethal. I don't know what the number grade you would give on. And
we don't have to worry about numbers. That's for other prognosticators to put numbers on.
Right.
We'll just use adjectives here.
Yeah, I just think that my fastball gets hitters out, and there's never a time where I don't believe that it's going to miss a bat. And in order to take that next step and be that starting pitcher who's dominant in the major leagues, I need that changeup. And that is something that I've been working on for the past 2 years. And it's something that doesn't come natural to me because I'm a high octane guy. I throw hard, my arm moves fast, and I'm channeling a whole lot of energy, tunneling it up from the ground all the way through my legs and pushing off that rubber pretty hard. And I've struggled with having a changeup with enough of a differential in velocity. I was throwing changeups at 93 miles an hour during my six starts with Augusta. And that's something where I need to figure out how to kill velo. And that's the goal of this offseason, get that third pitch and that changeup so that I can end up creating the triangle of movement and really get hitters off balance.
Absolutely. Well, you know, other than that, I just have one more question for you before we kind of let our listeners go and they can get back to their days and you can get back to your day. And is that there's a lot of fans, Braves fans, that listen to the podcast. They're really excited that you be at you being in the organization, about your future. So do you have anything you want to say to kind of, I mean, these are kind of new fans for you in a lot of ways, right? You've been a Demon Deacon. You've been a lot of things, but now you're an Atlanta Brave and there's a lot of fans excited about you. So anything you want to share with them?
Absolutely. I was at game three of the World Series, and that was the most electric environment I've ever been in. And I've been to some playoff games in a bunch of different sports, and I was really surprised and really pumped to see how great the Braves fan base is and how really it's just getting going. I think what we saw this year with the World Series is just a little taste of the next period here to be an Atlanta Brave. So I couldn't be more excited to be part of the organization. And I think it really starts with the fans that make it so special.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.